My name is Kim Annette Allen. I'm 44. Today is August 5, 2006, the day of my brother's wedding celebration. I'm here at the World Trade Center PATH station, and I'm interviewing my father, Kenton, and my aunt, Karen.
My name is Kenton Harl Allen, although I never use the name Harl. I am 69, going on 70. The date is August 5, 2006. My son's celebrating his wedding today. I'm at the World Trade Center at the PATH station, and next to me is my little, not so much little anymore, sister Karen Marie.
My name is Karen Marie Miller. I guess my maiden name's Allen. That's pertinent. I'm just turned 61. The date's August 5th, 2006. And I'm at the World Trade Center. And I am the aunt of the interviewer, Kim, and the sister of Kenton.
Great. So, you know, as I'm sitting here looking at you, Karen, and you, Dad, but especially Karen, you're Karen Marie, and Marie was my grandma's name, your mom. You look just like your mother. And I was hoping that the first thing you might want to do is tell me about your mother, Marie. What was she like?
Oh, that's a hard question. She was an amazing lady. She was very loving, and she was remarkable. I knew her differently than my brothers did because I was born so much later in her life, and I was alone with her more than my brothers were at a different time period. And in the end of her life, towards the end of her life, we did a lot together. We went to club meetings and did things together, and we were real close, and she has a lot of Marie's name after her. My daughter's name is Tina Marie, but I've got two cats. I've got Marie, the middle name.
And my other daughter is named Carmen Marie.
And your granddaughter is Zaina Marie.
Oh, yes.
Like that, she was somebody that never could find fault with people. She always found something nice about everybody she met, even strangers. She would take them in. She was good to my friends. Some of my friends had problems, and she took them under her wing. And she just was a remarkable lady.
Do you have some first thoughts you'd like to add about Grandma, Dad?
Well, I know I loved her very much. She would read me the Hardy Boy Mysteries in the bottom bunk of my bed, and I remember that was great when I can get my mama to do that. And she said I shouldn't read in bed sideways because I'd ruin my eyes, because one eye would be closer to the bed than the other, and I might destroy my eyes. I remember her beautiful smile, and of course I remember her. My father was a rather difficult man to be married to because he was stubborn, extremely intelligent, not confident in himself, and he needed to be reinforced, and he was messy, which my brother inherited. Naturally, I'm very, very neat myself because I married very well.
Karen,
what a neat lady.
Karen, is he speaking properly? Is he neat?
I think that he has the Allen messy genes, just like I tend to be. Yeah. The collecting syndrome and the...
Yeah.
It seems to be that everybody puts things on the floor and sorts them and gets back to them later.
Isn't it true that Grandma never threw anything away?
Well, she did collect things. I always thought Grandpa or Dad was the collector, but after she was gone, I found a lot of things that she had saved and, like, plastic bags, 10 or 12, hooked together with a rubber band.
At Christmas time, do you remember what she saved off of every package?
Wrapping paper, and she'd iron it. We had to open our packages very carefully and one at a time. So that was Dad's idea, one at a time. But we had to open them very, very carefully so that she could save the paper. And if it was wrinkled, she would iron it. And honest to goodness, I still have a couple pieces that she saved in my wrapping paper box.
And she had a tremendous sense of humor. I remember Christmas times, we had long play records then. If somebody got a long play record, well, she said, we all said it was an egg beater. It was an egg beater, even though we knew it was a record, and that was funny.
Well, one time she wrapped up an egg beater and said this was a record.
I didn't remember that.
She was funny. How did the funny lady like Grandma, who is from Portland, Oregon, how did she end up in Kansas?
I know that one.
Want to tell it?
She went to college in George Fox College for 3 years. She's long enough to get a diploma from there, but she came out here where her sister lived, and she was working at Friends University, and she went 1 year at Friends, and she was in the chapel at Friends, and there was somebody going to Friends that wasn't going to go to chapel, and they had to fill. They only counted empty seats, and then they had my dad sit in the seat. And it happened to be next to my mother, and that's how they met. And they weren't supposed, back then, they weren't supposed to date or whatever. And he,
back then, is when are we talking about?
What time 1924, I think, maybe.
My father, Alvin Allen, who had no middle name they wanted to name Alvin Wilbur Allen after his grandfather. No, there was an argument, so he just had no middle name. Anyway, he went to school at Winfield at
Southwestern
College, Kansas, and he was a debater, and that's why he happened to be in Wichita, because there was a debate tournament. And so he went to chapel and sat next to Marie Hester.
And she didn't know what to do. They struck up some kind of conversation or something, and she had to ask the house mother if it was okay for her to communicate with him. And so he wrote her a letter, and she went to the...
Told her all about himself.
And everything, and so she answered every one of his questions with a question, and they started writing to each other, and that's how it started.
Now, how did her family feel about her being courted by a man from Kansas?
I don't think they were very thrilled, and they got engaged while she was out here in Kansas, and they were planning to be married, and they went back to, well, she went and met Dad's family in Jetmore, and I remember...
Western Kansas.
And Hodgman County, to be exact, and... She was sitting around the table with his family, and they were talking. I don't know whether they were talking politics or what they were doing, but she announced that she was a socialist, and she didn't know what that meant particularly, but shocked them all. And she met the family, and then they went back to Portland and to Newburgh, where all of her family lived, and met his family, and then they were married almost right away, and they sailed the day after they married to the Philippine Islands, for where Dad had a job in the Philippines, and stayed there about 2 years.
Well, we should talk about that in just a minute, but first, how different were they? Mm. Can you tell me a little bit about their different backgrounds? Because I think it was pretty different.
Oh, very different.
Where did he come from?
My father was a... lived on a farm out in western Kansas. He made money by growing watermelons, and nobody in his family had ever had a higher education at all. And he was the poet and the dreamer, and he was Fat Alvin and made fun of. And so the way he got himself out of that is to go to college. And he got his degree. And he suddenly was respected. And he fought through years, and he got his doctor's degree. And so we had to call him Dr. Allen from after that, doctor in education. And he had a lot of pride in that, but he always had a certain inferiority feeling. He had to be built up. He had to be built up, and it was a problem his whole life that he needed to be encouraged, because he had this inferiority feeling that came from his youth, because they made fun of old Fat Al, you know.
Back so. In the beginning, he also trapped skunks to raise money.
Oh, yeah.
And he had to earn his way through high school, because they couldn't put him through that, and it took him 5 years to get through high school because he had to work on the farm, and so that put him in the same, mother was a year behind in college, or she had an extra year, and so that put them in the same graduating class.
Now, my mother, our mother, was from a very different background. Her father was a physician, and he was a traveling physician. So it was an educated home. The mother stayed at home, and Myra Del Hester was her name, right? And one of the very serious things that we have to talk about if we talk about my mother is that they weren't too eager for her to get married, because they were worried about her, because she had had bouts of depression that started very young, and it hounded her the rest of her life to a certain degree.
And they considered her very delicate in health, and they didn't want her to get married.
Or have children.
Yeah,
or have
they didn't
children.
Want her to have children. And but something.
She was feisty, she did it anyway.
I just lost the thought.
That's okay. It'll come back. So she...
One thing about Dad that you didn't mention, he's the first person in his family to go through high school and graduate. And then
High school, too.
And then he's the first person to go to college and the first person to get a degree. And many of his nieces and nephews considered him the goal, and that after he did that, all of the kids graduated from high school, and many of them went on. They considered him the
role model. Yeah.
Oh, yes. That was very important to him to be that. And
he really came from a family of dirt farmers.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. The worst farmland, right?
Oh, it was very dry. And
also picked cotton.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they start it when the Sooners in Oklahoma first?
Mm-hmm. He was in Oklahoma a little while, yeah.
And they picked cotton down there.
Yeah. So it was not an easy life.
Not an easy life.
So he deserves some credit for having made his
He
way
deserves
out.
A lot of credit.
But Grandma was really different.
Her
family
was considered more of a privileged life, because they all had
tennis lessons.
She was a very good
tennis lessons.
I've got in my office in Wichita her tennis racket. She was a very good tennis player, and Letterman was one
college.
Of the best. Yeah. Was it at Friends University she played tennis in Wichita?
I don't know whether it was there
I think
or
it was at Friends, and she
or
was very Fox. Good.
So I'm going to ask you a question you may not have ever considered. Do you think your parents had a great love affair, at least at the beginning?
Oh, yes. I think so.
Why do you think that?
I just do. I've seen the... They had letters that I found, and how could somebody put up with all the working so hard to keep Dad up if she wasn't really in love with him totally, clear to the end? It was a big deal. And to balk the families and... I mean, she had to fight to go against the grain and get married and go off like she did.
And she always was with him. I'm sure there were no affairs in that. They cared about each other and supported each other. And old Alvin and Marie, you know, the typical things of... But I don't remember any big fights or anything awful. My mother's was an avoider. If there was a conflict, she moved away from it. She just didn't challenge it. And I guess that was a surviving thing.
So after they were married, they set sail for the Philippines. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And what did they do there?
He's an administrator. And she taught too, didn't she?
She taught some, and she also had the first Girl Scout troop in the Philippines. She had a group of girls, and she also taught sewing. I have a book of all the stitches, and each page had a different stitch that she taught. And they were considered elite because they had servants. And
they had the experience of being sort of American colonists in the Philippines, they were very privileged.
Tell them the story about, wasn't Mom dressed up in a Muslim garb and sat in his lap, and he didn't know it was her, and she was trying to embarrass him because this woman was sitting on him, and it was Marie.
He got all upset and everything.
Sense of humor.
So she was a practical joker.
Oh, my, yeah. Yes.
Later on, she embarrassed you by riding a bicycle on college campus.
Oh, yes. I was going to school there, and she would ride her bicycle around campus. And yeah, well.
I don't figure that was any worse than you going barefoot in public.
Well, it was raining, running down the street, you know.
She was just ahead of her time because everybody rides bicycles now.
So after they got back from the Philippines, before she was embarrassing you on the college campus, she and Granddad started a family. Where did they settle when they got back? They were there 2 years, right?
Well, they were advised to stay because it was during the big depression and they were homesick. And there was a lot of unsettledness in the Philippines. There were some tribal fightings and things like that, and some things weren't safe. I think Dad was challenged with one of those bolo knives like they brought back.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody broke his desk with a knife and a threat because he didn't give his son a grade or something like that. But they wouldn't listen because they were still homesick, and they came back and there wasn't any work.
Because it was about 1931, or
they left in 29, about 1931. That's about right.
Our older brother Larry Alvin, he got the middle name, was born in 1934, 2 years, 2 months, and 4 days. As we always said, older than I was. And where was he born? Was he born in?
All of us were born in Portland.
Portland, Oregon. And then I was born 2 years later, and I was Kenton Harl Allen, and my father made fun of my name, Kenton. I had an Uncle Harl, and he said Harlicker, and so the rest of my life, I would never use Harl. I was Kenton H. Allen. Of course, we joked it was Herkimer. We never tell.
I thought when I was a kid.
Yeah. I remember once my brother Larry called me Kenton Harl, and I got so angry at him, I ran him around, I chased him around the block trying to get him. So, you don't mess with it. Now, my name is Kenton Harl Allen, okay?
So then Karen Marie was born. What do you remember about that?
Karen
Marie. That was 9 years later. I'll always be younger.
Yeah, you are the baby sister.
Yes, and I remember Karen Marie. Karen Marie, the cutest baby I ever did see. My first poem. My father was a poet, and so he's tried to instill that into me. And she was cute. I'm looking at her right now. She's got a nice smile on her face. She's still cute. A little non-baby-ish, but cute. Nice lady. Looks a lot like her mother, especially after Karen lost her. How many pounds?
205.
She lost 205 pounds. She was very, very, very seriously ill with obesity, and she lost 205 pounds. And now her face looks like that pretty face of Marie.
It really does. You do look like Grandma. So were you excited about Karen being born?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you have any responsibilities as big brother?
Probably changing her diapers, but I don't remember that.
I know a story.
Okay, tell it. I'm ready.
There's a going from Portland to Newburgh, I believe it was. There was a halfway bridge, and the boys used to fight over who got to hold me. And so at the halfway bridge, they had to change. One would hold me till the halfway bridge, and then the other one would hold me the rest of the way. And they split it at the halfway bridge.
That seems to indicate they liked you. I'd say you're pretty.
Well, I never knew they disliked me.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we liked you always. You were our little sister. Wow.
I don't have a lot of memories when I was little. They start when I'm about 3 or 4.
So during the time when you were growing up, Granddad was teaching?
Oh, yes. He was always a teacher.
So he was able to find a job when he came back? Or
wasn't he always a teacher?
When he was first back, he did something where he was in the... You lived in tents.
Oh, the Quonset Hut. You lived in a Hooverville. Didn't you live in a Hooverville for a while Granddad went to school?
I wasn't born yet.
I don't know.
Maybe you did?
Lee spent one summer in tents. He couldn't find a job, and he had an illness where he was on crutches.
Yeah.
And that was right after he came back. And that's about the time they had the fire in the cabin, and all of their things burned up.
On the Alsea River near Walport, Oregon, and that was a place of my youth that they all... Did you get to go there at all?
No, that's before my time.
And we would go out fishing. I caught my flounder on the dock at Walport, and that was thrilling. My father loved to fish. He wasn't very good at it, but he loved to do it. And
that was the cabin of your grandfather, your mother's father.
Yes, my mother's father, and they built it, and then eventually it burned down, so I've gone back there to try to see it, but it's can't tell where it was. It's gone.
Our mother was a prankster.
Oh, yes. Do you have an idea?
Oh, yeah.
Well, tell me.
Talk about the cabin at the Alsea River. She and her younger brother, Ralph, not the youngest brother, but the... They seemed to team up together and get into trouble. And Marie was the ringleader, but
always.
She didn't always get caught. And they did things like walking across the railroad trestles over the river. And that was a no-no. And one time they fell in the water, and they thought they weren't going to get caught. They hung in their wet clothes on the rafters in the cabin. Of course, when you lay down or you look up, there was all their wet clothes, and their mother couldn't prove it was Marie that led the activity, but she knew.
Yeah, of course.
And I don't know. She was always doing something, and she would get the other kids in trouble, and she wouldn't get caught.
Now, Karen has a very different and hard upbringing than I did, because when we lived in Caldwell, Idaho, my father was at the College of Idaho, now the Albertsons College of Idaho, as a professor. My mother got very, very sick and had to be hospitalized for extreme depression, and those were in the days when they didn't have the medications and the counseling, and she had shock treatment after shock treatment. And I remember going visiting her at the hospital, and She was just a ghost. And I was about an eighth grader then, or about that age.
How old was I the first time?
I don't know. You're very young, and you left to go to Newburgh, Oregon, to live with Uncle Homer and Aunt Olive and Joyce and Meredith. And you were gone for a year, I don't know, because Mom was, and Dad certainly wasn't able to parent you. And so it was Dad and me, and you were gone. And Larry.
I seem to think there was a time when I was about a year and a half old that I went that I can't account for because I can't remember any of it.
Well, you were with...
Like that. And then I know the time I remember the most was when I was 9, approximately, and I spent 9 months away.
Right.
And I remember...
It might have been twice you were there.
Kenton looked very much like his Uncle Homer when he was young. And I remember waking up and there was somebody sleeping on the couch, and I thought it was Kenton. It was Uncle Homer, and he said, "Do you want to fly home with me?" And boy, I thought that was just a real game. I thought I was going for a visit, and I didn't come home for 9 months, and I thought my family didn't want me for some reason.
So what did they tell you? Why were they taking
you
away?
They didn't tell you.
They never tell me anything.
No.
Didn't tell me anything at
all.
When
did you find out that Mom had been seriously ill?
When I was 16 years old in Mexico, when Gretchen, Kim's aunt,
Kathy, from Mom's side of the family,
her mom's side of the family, called me a brat and said I could be a lot nicer to my mother because she'd been so sick, and I knew nothing about any of it. And I became an extremely rude, upset teenager because I had not been told anything about my mother's illnesses or anything. And if I had known, even at 9, I could have done something. And I could have helped.
That was in the era where mental illness, it was a big shame. And it was something you didn't talk about and you were embarrassed by it.
Family kept secrets,
guilt.
Guarded secrets for years.
Yeah, that's a big... problem in our family.
How do you think it would have changed things for you, both of you, and for Grandma, if people had named what it was and been more open about it?
I think a 9-year-old could be much more understanding. A 9-year-old is not a baby and could understand a lot and can be helpful. And surely at 16, I could have been a little bit better equipped to understand what was going on. I was at a total loss, and to hear it from Gretchen, who wasn't close to me, and she thought I was awful. She thought I was a terrible person.
And not understanding your mom more.
Yes, and I was completely blown away.
I know years later, when we were living in Wichita, and Mother was sent to a mental institution there, and the shock treatments again. It was still before they had worked out better ways to handle it. And I remember going there, and I just cry with her, and she would just cry and cry, and I would hold her and cry, and she, "I'm never going to get better." I was older. My brother was no counselor, and Karen was younger, and I had a lot of burden, and it was just extremely hard to see my mother like that, and it just for a long period of time. And I'd go visit her, and she would cry, and there would be no, she just thought it was going to be the rest of her life like that. Eventually, she did come out of it. And fortunately, in the years before she died, she was in pretty good shape, wasn't she?
Yeah, she had one episode closer to the end of her life, but they brought her out of that with medication, and
yeah,
she had shock treatments again.
She was in her 70s, right? In her 70s?
Yeah. The year's 70s or
in,
her age
in
70s?
In her
70s, yeah. It was when we took a trip to Oregon, and we took her out to see Homer and Olive and Ralph and Rosa. And coming back from that trip, I called home and said that we were going to have to do something because she'd slipped into a depression coming back, and I was having to help her with her hygiene and all that type of thing, and I knew that we were there again when we were traveling back. But back then, by then I you know, knew what was going on, and I could recognize the signs. But
the nice thing is, when she was well, she was extremely well liked by friends, and she was active in the Quaker Church and Missionary Society, and she cooked hamburgers to earn money during lunch period at Caldwell, Idaho, and she loved to play cards, and she had her card friends, and she had some great times late in life.
The famous description of our mother is she'd play cards at a drop of a hat. Didn't matter what kind, she'd play
every single card game I know how to play, she taught me. Yeah, she loved cards.
Once she found out that poker cards weren't necessarily for gambling, because she was raised that cards or poker cards, gambling was, you know, a no-no. Once she found out you could use those cards for other games that were acceptable, then she would play cards. She was raised on Rook and Flinch.
Now, Granddad was a pretty funny guy, too, sometimes, wasn't
he? Mm-hmm. He wrote a poem about the boy slipping.
Yeah, tell us the poem that he wrote about you, right?
In my heart I hold him high and never let him fall, or something like that. And Morgan, Daddy, Morgan, and so forth. And yeah, it was really nice. And he wrote a poem about some boy that had a hole in his pants, and he choked to death by falling through the hole in his pants, or something like that.
It was, fell through the hole and choked himself to death.
Yeah, it was funny. It was funny.
So this was a pretty hard life for him, too.
Oh, it wasn't easy for
him. He didn't know what to do. He just didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. They didn't send me away because they didn't love me. They just didn't understand what to tell. Mm-hmm. He couldn't have handled me and the two boys at the same time. He wasn't capable of it. But I didn't know that. One of my strongest memories in that long time that I was away, and he never remembered it until I told him about it, was that he came on an Easter vacation all the way from Idaho to Oregon to see me when he should have been studying for finals, because he needed to see me and he knew I needed to see family. And he drove all that way to come see me.
Who's that?
You.
Me?
Yes, you.
Oh, okay.
And it meant a lot, and he didn't even remember doing that.
But you've always remembered it.
Oh, yes. And another real strong memory I had is after Mother had been sick and we'd been separated. That's why I said I think I had a younger time I was separated, because when we moved to Caldwell, I was looking so forward to having my own room and having both my brothers and my mother, my whole family together. And I really remember that strongly, and that's about my first real memory. Then there was the issue of whether you had to have the door open so the light would come in. And then eventually I got so I had to have the door shut and have stuffed things under there so there was no light. But I used to have to go to sleep with Larry playing the piano or something like that.
I have memories of babysitting you, too.
Really?
Yeah. I used to be your babysitter.
Do you remember going trick-or-treating for me when I had chicken pox?
I'm sure I did, because I probably got some of the candy, I suspect. One thing I have to say about my father, he was definitely liberal politically. He was a good Quaker. A lot of the values I have came from him about helping people, my mom too. And one of the saddest things about him is this inferiority complex. He struggled that year after year. I became his counselor. And I don't know how much you know about this, Karen, but every time he had a problem with his school, Lakeland College in Wisconsin, and Friends University in Wichita. He would conflict with administrators for reasons, and I had to go up to school and become the intermediary and resolve it because he couldn't do it himself. And so it was kind of tough. I had to do that with my brother, too, and he was in difficulty when he was a teacher. So,
just like you had to intervene and be a father figure in my life, too, because they couldn't do it many times.
So what are the strengths of your family? It sounds to me like there's some ones I'm hearing here. What are some of the things you treasure from your family relationships?
The last few years, once I put a stop to the hiding things in our family, because at one time Homer, mother's youngest brother, had a hiatal hernia, and he was going to have surgery, and at the time he was going to have that surgery, it was not a done deal. It wasn't exciting. It wasn't one that was always successful. It was a real serious thing. It wasn't, just go in there and do it. There was a real danger, and they weren't going to tell mother about it. And I threw a fit. I said, she has a right to know, because she needs to know he's having the surgery, and she needs to have the right to cry and worry and whatever, because what if he didn't make it and you didn't told her? That would be worse. And so I told her, and I said, you need to quit protecting her so much, because personally, I think she had the stronger personality than Dad did. She just would wear herself out periodically, and the depression would set in. And so I told her, and from then on, Helen quit protecting her, and she was told the truth about everything. And I can tell you one thing, because I have the same... I think my mother was probably bipolar. If she was born today, they probably would have put that handle on her, and I am too. That she was strong enough to tell me at one time when I was really down and they wanted to give me shock treatments, and I had such a horrible prejudice against them because I saw them when I was a nurse, and then I knew all about my mother's illness, that I didn't want to take them. And she told me, you need to do it because it saved my life. And so she had the strength to help me face what I had to do. So she had a lot of strength that people didn't always recognize.
As I think through the many years of my old life, one thing I profoundly, as Karen knows and you, Kim, know, is that I've been near death several times. You know, when I was in college, I almost died of pneumonia. I had a train wreck and almost died. I was on a heart transplant list and almost died. And I just had open heart surgery with 3 hospitalizations. It's terrible. And I'm absolutely convinced in my little Quaker way that there's something left for me to do.
I believe that.
And you can't solve the world, but you got to do everything you can. When I taught it in Sunday school, they taught me, Benny Mavey taught me that if you give a beggar on the street a dollar because he's hungry and he goes around the corner and buys a bottle of booze, that didn't change what you did. You did the best you knew how. You know, it's not what you solve, it's what you try to solve. And I believe that. I'm still working at it. Haven't made it yet.
One thing theory I always had is that they gave the antidepressants to the wrong member of the family. That if they had treated Dad's, some of his problems like that, that maybe it would have been better and he wouldn't have worn her down so much.
Sounds to me that, like, Marie Hester Allen was actually a very strong, inspirational person.
Very. Right. I think she was a stronger one of the two. She just had something that she couldn't quite handle.
And guess what? Karen married well, and I married well. And I've had three great children and two great grandchildren. And my son just got married. And I'm so happy about the values of all of them. And Karen is an extremely great grandmother to her multi-grandkids.
We have to count them.
And let's not forget how many.
Well, Tina has six.
And you helped deliver one of Tina's babies in a taxi, didn't you?
I delivered two babies on the couch in my living room.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Twins.
Okay.
Tina has six, and Lenny has, she had three, and she got one by marriage, and one is deceased. That comes to nine.
Pretty impressive.
And then I have three great-granddaughters.
You got more than I do.
Let's not forget something else, too. You have each other. You have the best brother and sister relationship in the world.
We absolutely.
We do.
Yeah, we've lost our brother, but he never was that close to us because he had a very, very difficult life and some value problems. But
I was pretty close to Larry. The last few years of his life, I had to take over the role of taking care of him.
Yeah, you sure did.
And everything, and it was. Seems to be my mission in life to be taking care of
and
other
Lenny,
people.
And Lenny and your husband took care of our father. So
yeah.
I'm really grateful
to
that.
I took care of him, too.
Oh, of course you did.
Well,
we all tried to.
I'm pretty proud to be part of this family. Thank you very much for letting me interview you.
Hey, our
I
pleasure.
Love you.
You know.
Igualmente, senora.
Everybody tells me now that I look like my mother. I think I have the same type of temperament. We both share the same emotional disease, because it is a disease. It's not being crazy, it's a disease. And I tend to be somebody that can't see the bad in people. I see the good in people.
That's your mother.
The fatal flaw of our family is loving too much.
Yeah.
I'd like to have that flaw.
Mm.
And I do have one daughter that I love her dearly, but she has the same. I think she's got a lot of her grandma in there, too.
That's a great family. I love you both.
Glad to be here.
Love you, too.